This podcast was brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
I'm Dylan.
I'm Tyler.
And this week we're talking about Bloomborough in CEDH. The set is here right now. It should be release weekend, pre-release weekend.
This is actually pre-release
weekend.
Pre-release
weekend. Normally release it during release, but now it's pre-release.
We're talking about when the video releases,
which
Tyler.
Is next Friday for us.
Yeah.
No, right now, we actually didn't film it just yesterday.
We have the AI machine, just edited it in 4 seconds.
We're not even real.
This is all AI.
Yeah.
No, that's not a good joke. We don't do AI. Bloomborough. We're talking about Bloomborough.
Yes. Now, I have a couple of logistical questions that I need answers to before we go into the actual cards for CEDH.
Some prerequisites.
So I know that when you travel to Bloomborough, you become one of the 10 creature types
that are featured. I believe
that
to be correct, yeah. Okay.
What if you're born on Bloomborough as one of these creatures and then leave the plane? Do you gain a human form?
Yes.
I got to imagine so, right? Do you know that this is true?
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh, but
I've just
assume.
Seen the anime series Odd Taxi, in which everyone appears to be an animal, and then it turns out they were all actually humans the whole time, and I've just decided it works like that.
I'm kind of hoping in my head that we already know of some creatures that are from Bloomborough that we didn't know about, and then eventually we'll see them leave. Like, what if we saw Kaikar, who is a bird on Bloomborough, maybe they're from Bloomborough, I don't actually know, leave, and then they're a person elsewhere? I think that would be cool.
I think that would be super cool, too.
But that's just me making stuff up. Who knows?
No, I would absolutely love that.
To be honest, I don't really pay enough attention to what the Vorthos are talking about to really know what's being talked about. I kind of more view it as a gameplay stuff, but this is just my gut feeling.
Yeah, this time I was like, you know, it looks like they're making a big deal out of the lore for this one. I'm going to give it a try. And I read the first one, and I immediately forgot to ever check on it again.
No, didn't stick with you.
Sounds like it was captivating.
Yeah, I want pictures. I want an anime of these sets. I think that would be super cool.
I need photos and speech bubbles, and if there's none of those, I can't stay
need,
in it.
Dylan's like, I don't want a chapter book.
What is this? How old am I? Absolutely not.
I can't be bothered to paint the picture in my own head.
You gotta do it for me.
Yeah. That was my one question I wanted answering to.
We can talk about the cards now.
Well, no, we're not gonna read the cards. We're just gonna look at the pictures.
We're just gonna describe the pictures, and you have to guess what the name of the card is.
So we're gonna start with the white card.
Okay.
This is Dewdrop Cure, and it's a little mouse looking at a dewdrop with a flower. What
Look,
do you
we
think
don't actually have to do that.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Alright, so this is 2 and a white for a sorcery that says gift a card. This is a new mechanic that says that you can promise. I love that that's on the card.
The wording is so funny.
So funny. You may promise an opponent a gift as you cast the spell. If you do, they draw a card before its other effects. And then it says you can return up to 2 target creature cards each with mana value 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. But if the gift was promised, instead, return up to 3 target creature cards with mana value 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
I think this card is okay, but in light of like having recently gotten recommission, I think recommission's probably still just better.
What does recommission do exactly?
That's a 2 mana version of this card that brings back one creature.
One thing.
Or artifact. And so some Tivit lists play it. Brandon included it because I said, hey, doesn't this get back time sieve?
That's pretty good. Okay. Yeah.
I think this probably is not enough better to justify the 3 mana cost. And I don't think there's any like combination of 3 2 mana or less creatures that essentially just wins you the game on the spot.
Yeah. Is this a sorcery, right?
Yeah, it's a sorcery.
One thing to say about the gift giving. One, the gift giving is not always draw cards. Sometimes it's other shit. With the gift giving in particular, and again, not with this card, but with instance, it is a forced draw to your opponent, so it's a way to stop a Thassa's Oracle.
That's funny.
It's not super worth it most of the time, but it could be something. Not here again, obviously. The reason why I think this card is a little bit interested is specifically bringing back 2 things means that if you buried alive 3 creatures and 2 of them are the breakfast combo,
ooh,
the blue one and the white one, Nomad something and the other thing that I can't remember the name of, you can reanimate both of those things with this card, mill your whole library, and then with like a Narcomoeba and a Dread Return, reanimate a Thassa's Oracle. So it is effectively a 6 mana, 2 card combo. That's okay. That's close to good sometimes. Maybe that's something. But I agree, other than outside of the combo potential, I would not be playing this.
That's funny. Buried Alive actually does give you like full-blown piles. If you can even find 3 creatures with CMC 2 or less and then gift a card to someone and then get all 3 of them back. So
there are probably other combos besides the breakfast one that I'm thinking
this
of.
This is like a Parodian Hulk that you don't have to sacrifice if you really want to think about it that way. So I'm sure you could build some fun piles. We'll leave it at that. So yeah. I'm going to give this card probably a 2 because there might be some fun scenarios that we can do with it, but I don't think it's going to be like a longevity kind of card in the CEDH.
Should we talk about a rating scale one time before we get too far into the numbers since yeah. the new podcast?
Oh, we're going to talk about the rating scale?
Yeah, so we are going to give these cards anywhere from a 1 to 5 based on...
Or a 0.
Or a 0, or above a 5 if yeah. we want to.
You can assume that all the cards that we don't talk about today from this set, we have given 0s.
Or below a 0.
Yeah. And we definitely never miss cards.
And we've never missed them. Yeah,
we've still yet to be wrong on the podcast.
That's true.
Oh.
So yeah, 5 CDH All-Star Playable. It's going to go in the best of the best decks. It is an instant staple. To me, that's a 5. We can agree?
Totally fair, yeah.
4, it's going to go in 1 or 2 very powerful decks. A high power, very like, this is like a Kinnan card or something that's maybe not tier 1, top of the 1, but in certain decks, this is a very good CDH card. To me, that's somewhere under 4.
I'm curious as to how low some of these other numbers are going to go if if a card that's seen play in one deck is a 4.
I didn't mean 1, I meant like a few. Not in, it's not a generically card, but in certain strategies, it's a powerful effect. Something like Deafening Silence or something like that.
Like, something like maybe Displace or Kitten. Like Displacer a lot of strategies one, but me. Not every single blue deck is going
to
play it.
Exactly. To me, a 3, it goes in one deck. It's got one good home. It can find somewhere good in a reasonable strategy. Maybe not the best of the best decks, but it is a solid CDH card. It's on rate with other things. It goes in one-ish deck.
Yeah, normally cards for decks like Magda, Obnixilis, and Yuriko are cards that fit this category.
2 is fringe. 2 is like, we don't really think it'll see play. It could see play. It's close. It could be in a couple of decks. Not really sure. 2 is overall, to me, not super powerful, but it could be in the
cards
right situation.
Cards that maybe we're hopeful about, too, yeah.
And then a 1 is, like, pretty much not good. Maybe one deck can use it well, but other than that, it's, like, a terrible-ass card, and you kind of got to be in a specific situation. Right? And then 0 is not good, not a CDH card.
All right, I think we can sign off on this. We all agree that these are what the numbers mean, and that won't change.
And that will never change, and we're always faithful to this system.
Yes. And we're never wrong about these cards. So Dewdrop Cure, I still think is going to be a 2 because I'm a little bit hopeful about it.
To me, somewhere like a 2.7, 2.75, I think is where I put this. I don't know that it'll see play for sure. It is a little bit above rate. Normally, 2-card combos, we want to spend around 5 mana for those. So this is a little bit expensive. But in the right shell, I think this could be pretty useful.
I'm giving this a 1.5. I don't think it'll see play in any decks.
Well, that's white, so let's move on to blue.
White didn't get a ton, which is fine. White's been getting a lot of treats recently. I think it's okay that white didn't get a lot of cards for CDH.
Well, the last set review that we talked about was incredibly Grixis heavy for the Assassin's Creed set review.
These cards, I think, are much better in the scaling.
We can actually use these cards. Like, Into the Flood Maw, this is a card that's definitely going to see play. This is a blue mana for an instant that says, gift a tapped fish. So instead of a card, your opponent gets a tapped 1/1 fish. That's blue.
You choose the opponent, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a singular opponent that gets it. So you can advantageously give that away. It says, return target creature an opponent controls to its owner's hand. If the gift was promised, instead return target non-land permanent an opponent controls to its owner's hand.
This card's great.
This is arguably a better rate than Chain of Vapor, even though it does a little bit less than Chain of Vapor.
Rate-wise, it's actually the exact same most of the time. It is the same mana cost and it does the same effect, although Chain of Vapor's rate is potentially higher because Chain of Vapor can bounce multiple things.
I just meant that there's no drawback in the sense that they can bounce something back. So to me, the rate on Chain of Vapor in a vacuum like that is worse because there is a drawback. There is no drawback on bouncing someone's creature.
The one drawback that I see, you can't bounce your own creature. And reason why bounce spells are so good, not a big reason, but one of many reasons, is because you can potentially bounce your own Dockside, which is huge. This cannot do that. In Storm versions, I like Chain of Vapor a lot more. Obviously, you can bounce all of your own mana rocks, increase your Storm, do a whole bunch of stuff. This can't do that, but I do like this card when you compare it to Chain of Vapor in certain decks, in permanent heavy decks. Not having the, like you said, the ability for your opponents to bounce your shit is really good.
I think if I was still on Chain of Vapor in Kinnan, which I don't think I am right now, I would probably be considering replacing it because Kinnan is one where you often have creatures that you very much don't want them to be able to bounce in return.
I was thinking this is a great card for Kinnan because you've said that before. You've cut Chain of Vapor, but this kind of fixes the Chain of Vapor problem.
Sort of, yeah. I think the slot it would be competing for is March of Swirling Mist, and I have trouble seeing cutting that because it can hit so many things. I'm not sure that I'll be running this, but it's definitely worth considering in decks where Chain of Vapor really hurts when it's turned back against you. The chain part of Chain of Vapor is not always going to hurt you. Sometimes it gives you the opportunity to bounce something a different opponent controls in order to force them to sacrifice a land to bounce the thing that's winning, and sometimes that chain will end up in an advantageous state for you where it ends up bouncing multiple things that you don't control. So if you're very far behind, I think Chain of Vapor remains much better because they're just less likely to bounce your stuff and more likely to bounce other opponents' stuff. But at parity, I think this is Probably better.
To me, I'm rating this card like a 4.7, 4.8 or something like that. I think this is like an actual CDH staple that goes in a lot of decks. It is, like you said, very comparable to Chain of Vapor. I think Chain of Vapor's ceiling is way higher. Chain of Vapor's floor is way lower. So I think a card like this could definitely see play. And the fish being tapped, I think, is also not nothing. Sometimes if you just need to like get rid of a blocker and you're like, well, even the fish can go to somebody else. So that doesn't even really matter. But you can get rid of someone's blocker and give someone else a tapped fish and not give yourself a blocker, if that makes sense. I don't know, decks like Nigella might find that interesting and like something like that.
I think a lot of the decks that are not looking to play Chain of Vapor like Akinin could easily just swap this in. I can also understand for you not wanting it because you do still have so many other bounce effects, and this is only bouncing a non-land permanent if you're giving away a resource to an opponent, which, again, arguably, it can be tough to find the opponent that you want to give this away to, but...
And unsummon's not good. Just the bouncing a creature is not good enough. You want that ability to bounce whatever you want.
But that being said, I think this card is also like a 4.5, somewhere around there too, because it's just so powerful, so versatile.
4.7 for me.
I will also agree with 4.5.
Cool. That sounds great. All right, we're going to move on to Mockingbird. This is X and a blue for a 1-1 creature bird bard. It has flying, and you may have Mockingbird enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield with mana value less than or equal to the amount of mana spent to cast Mockingbird, except it's a bird in addition to its other types and has flying.
I know originally you didn't want to include this, and I think you're probably right. It won't see a lot of play, but the fact that at its worst case scenario, this is still a 1-mana 1-1 flyer that a deck like Yuriko or Edric or something like that might be interested in, and it scales pretty nice, gives the thing that you copy flying. It's more mana expensive. The reason why we like Phantasmal Image and other clones like that Flesh Duplicate is because they're 2 mana and it's a very good rate, and this is going to be more expensive, but maybe.
Yeah, and normally the thing that you're copying is always less expensive, but this forces you to always be spending more mana on the thing that you actually want to copy. So
not exactly true, because it's not where the CMC is less than X, it's less than the mana spent to cast the spell, which includes the blue pip. So if a Dockside is down, you can still cast this for 1 and a blue and get a Dockside. So I think when you're looking at cloning Docksides, when you're looking at early game, this is probably pretty good. Okay. But when you're trying to clone someone's like Tivit or something, like this is going to feel like it sucks compared to the other options.
Okay, so this is a little bit better than I thought, but I still don't think that makes me want it in like most CEDH decks.
I would say that 90% of the reason why Phantasmal Image is played right now is because Dockside exists in the format, whether it's yours or your opponent's, and this copies Dockside at the same rate. The bonus of flying is something. It's obviously not as good as Phantasmal Image, and I don't think it's as good as Flesh Duplicate, but I do think it's close to Flesh Duplicate and... What am I blanking on? Phyrexian Metamorph. I do think it's like... In that conversation, is there another clone that's better than it?
So, yeah, here's the thing. To me, I don't think it edges out Phyrexian Metamorph because Phyrexian Metamorph is just easier to cast at three colorless
and
mana.
And it can copy the One Ring.
That's the big
and
thing.
And it can copy artifacts as well. So that's kind of a pretty big deal. I think in Kinnan, my deck, I would maybe look at this edging out Clever Impersonator, but Clever Impersonator can also copy anything, which can be very powerful. So I think this is in the unfortunate position of probably being like the fourth clone that most decks would play, and almost no decks are playing four clones.
Yeah, and especially in Kinnan, because you can't really flip into this because you have to pay the X, so it's like pretty bad in that. Like, you being able to flip into your clones, that's like a relevant part of why you play so many, I think. But I think in most decks, this is... I think you're right. This is still the fourth best clone. I still think Phantasmal Image, Flesh Duplicate, and Phyrexian Metamorph are all better than this card.
The reason why the clones are good is because they're flexible always at the same rate. Like, it can be a Timna, or it could be, I don't know, literally anything that's more than 3 mana at that point, where I'm now losing out on the advantage that I had from it being a clone.
The addition of flying isn't worth the extra mana that you have to pay.
No, but this card's a lot better than I thought it was before we started the show, though. I will say there's a lot of stuff that's been pointed out to me about this one. Even just it being a May ability, just being a 1-1 flyer on its own, I think is still pretty cool.
I give this one, I think, a 3. We said 3, it goes in one deck, right?
Yeah, 3 would have a home in one deck. Yeah.
I think this goes in Yuriko. It being a 1-1 flyer is relevant enough for Yuriko that you can bounce it back. And I think for me, it's maybe I'll say a 2.8.
Maybe 3 even is a little bit high, because maybe not every Yuriko plays it too. So maybe I'll say a 2.5.
I like that. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. All right. Next one is Poliwag Prodigy. This is one and a blue for a 1/3 creature frog wizard with evolve, which, in case you forgot, this is whenever a creature you control enters, if that creature has greater power or toughness than that creature, you put a +1/+1 counter on the polywog.
Can we pause real quick and talk about enters?
Oh,
instead
yeah.
of enters the battlefield?
Yeah. How do you guys feel about that?
There's no reason we shouldn't have been doing this already.
Yeah.
All players would already say ETB.
It's shorter than saying ETB now.
And
yeah.
ETB is nothing. I like that they're getting rid of like the terms like that that don't feel like magical, if that makes sense. Like
converted
saying,
mana cost.
Converted mana cost. Just mana value. It's just like, I like that they're shortening that. It is weird for my old brain to like read cards sometimes because enters what? Like I definitely do trip for a second, but I'll get used to it. And overall, I like enters a lot, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Sorry, keep going. I just wanted to bring that up quick.
No, we're all good. Let's talk about what this polywog does. Whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell with mana value less than polywog's power, draw a card.
Yeah.
So you really have to make sure that it evolves once before it's really gonna start triggering. But once it gets that first evolve, you, I can only imagine, are gonna draw an exorbitantly large amount of cards.
And once it gets its second, there's not many non-creatures that cost three or more. It is basically just going to be a Mystic Remora at that
yeah.
point. Once it evolves twice, like there's very few things, some Force of Will, whatever. But I think this card is like secretly great. I completely missed it until this morning when someone told us about it on Discord, I think.
Yeah, I think this is fantastic. This is certainly going straight into Ginnon.
Oh, yeah.
All the blue Ginnon team in the decks want this so
bad. Oh, my
bad.
And Ken, you're going to evolve this. Like, it's going to be huge in your deck.
I think another thing worth pointing out is that the same way like a turn one Mystic Remora is good because people are likely to try and play explosive zero-cost ramp, this actually does feed on the same thing. So most of the time, as Cam said, you're probably going to want to evolve it once to be taking advantage of most of the spells people are casting. Except on turn one. If you're on turn one and seat one and you can have an opening hand that can play this, then you're probably drawing at least two cards off of that because your opponents are going to play their Mana Crypts, Mox Diamonds, and Chrome Moxes, and like you're going to draw the cards
off
of it.
It's non-creature and not just like an instant or sorcery. So.
Yeah, it's the rocks too. This is like a for sure real CDH card, almost without a doubt.
I'm giving this a 5 because every blue farm deck's going to want this because can go...
Timna evolves it, because so does Chrome.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, you do this on turn one, Timna turn two. Like that's easily a card advantage engine that the rest of the table is going to have a very hard time keeping up with.
I think it's close to cards like Containment Priest and Esper Sentinel. Esper Sentinel is probably better than it just because one mana is better than two, but Containment Priest feels fair and it might be even a little bit better than Containment Priest
Are you talking about Archivist of Agma?
No. Yes, I am talking about Archivist of Agma and not Containment Priest. Thank you. I don't know.
Two mana creatures.
Yeah, I don't know why they got tripped up my brain. Yes, that's the card I'm talking about. I think it's on par with that card. It may be a little better than that card.
What was the first one you said?
Esper Sentinel was the other one, and Esper Sentinel is still better than this.
Yeah, it's probably between those two.
Esper Sentinel's strength being a one drop that Ranger Captain can find gives it a huge boost, but I do agree it is close.
They have the same drawback of it being a must draw and not
a
may.
Yes, that's true. Must draws are, that's real. Soon we're going to be cutting Thoracle just because, no, not worth it.
But
right?
Man, I mean, once this hits 5, like, it's just Nezahal. It's Nezahal.
And then it sticks around. No upkeep cost. You don't have to pay for it. It gets in with Timna. It's huge. Like, we've talked about, like, wanting more cards that can just attack our opponents. This is a Rhystic Study that can attack our opponents. Like, that's good.
Wow,
that's
and a
good.
Harder to counter Rhystic Study, too, that, like, less people are going to have on-the-stack answers for.
I'm also saying this is a 5, for sure.
5 of 5. This is a 5. This is a CDH staple. I think
this is
the best some
CDH
of the best
card that we've talked about in a long time.
Yeah, and we just
Did you
had
also
Monarize
say
3.
That you got told about it this morning?
Like, yes. Yeah, I just found out this card this morning, truly.
It was just revealed the day before that we started recording,
yeah,
though,
it was,
too. So.
It was revealed yesterday.
Yeah,
I didn't,
so to be fair, we're getting in at a great time. Moving on to the next card.
Yep. Oh, yeah. This one might be too silly.
20 Toed Toad is written by fucking Dr. Seuss.
It's kind of not a Dr. Seuss style, but...
20 Toed Toad?
Actually, what we're reaching for.
I mean, just mean the name of him is all. It's like a bit of a rhyme, like a tongue twister.
I guess so. I just always associate Dr. Seuss with like very open vowel rhymes, but...
20 Toed Toad.
Yeah,
my
I just
is
didn't
open
say it
when
right.
I say.
My delivery
20
was 20
Toed Toad. Well, I can't even think of a red
20
fish, blue fish,
toad
one fish,
took
two
a
fish.
Shit on the road, and then he went to visit your grandma.
That's right.
All right. That was my...
Sick.
Excellently done.
Thank you. All right. Let's read this fucking card. This is 3 and a blue for a 3/3 creature frog wizard that says your maximum hand size is 20. That's fucking ridiculous already. Whenever you attack with two or more creatures, put a 1/1 counter on 20 Toed Toad and draw a card. When 20 Toed Toad attacks, you win the game if you have 20 or more counters on it, or if you have 20 or more cards in your hand. Here's the flavor fail. You can't have a card for each toe because you're keeping the cards in between your toes. So you have less webbing in between your toes than four cards per hand.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what if the toad's balancing the cards like
and
this?
And one in the mouth.
So he's like Zorro-ing one of the cards that you have
Zorro
in your hand.
He's got a Zorro four cards for that.
Doesn't actually work either, though. You need two in the mouth.
Maybe, so in the art, he's got a pitchfork. Maybe he put some of them on the pitchfork,
I thought you were getting
too.
A whiteboard. I thought you were going to like draw this.
I think the toad is holding the cards like this on the fingertips.
This seems wildly inefficient.
But it's a toad, and the toad has very sticky fingertips.
No, he's holding a pitchfork. His hands are busy.
Did the toad eat a bunch of Cheetos or something? Is that why he's so sticky?
No, toads just have sticky fingers, right? They climb.
All right, stop it. Stop it.
All right, what do we think about this card? We've joked about him enough.
Four mana is a lot of mana. The draw effect should be easy enough to do, but
it doesn't
mana
have to attack. Yeah. Other creatures can attack.
It doesn't have to. So you can four mana right away, attack with two creatures, get the draw. That's fine and nice. The win condition, I don't know. Part of me says it's like, that's never going to happen. Like, that's so silly and ridiculous. We already have a ton of these blue things that have you win the game clauses on them. Thoracle is the only one that besides Labman that's been good. But like, what if you like ad nauseum and like get this and then just like this is like a win condition post ad nauseum.
It has to be not summoning stick.
Yeah.
Right,
well, two other creatures can already be in play. And they
no,
can attack.
For the win condition, it has to attack. But not only that, it also has to have 20 or more counters on it too.
I think it's an or.
It's or.
It's an or.
It's an or?
It's an or
situation.
It was an and. No. So you can just draw 20 and attack with it and another creature, two other creatures.
Oh, okay.
Is it, it and two others or two total counting itself?
When it attacks, you win the game is what it says. So
just it.
Just
it can
it.
Just be it. Yeah.
Oh, so the draw happens on two other creatures, but the win happens from itself attacking.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So you have to give it haste after the ad nauseum. That's probably not good.
Or
right?
You play it before like the turn before you ad nauseum or something.
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
I think this is in an awkward spot because it has win the game text, it has draw a card text. Neither of them is particularly easy to trigger. It costs four mana, which is too much. The decks that are routinely going to be wanting to attack with two creatures are like Timna decks, but they already have Timna to turn that into card draw, and this is just worse for a worse rate. And the win text requires you to do too much. It kind of reminds me of Revel in Riches, where you're thinking like, okay, 10 treasures wins me the game. I want treasures anyway. Like, I get 10 treasures sometimes. Maybe this is doable, but it just is too much for how much the card costs. And I think this is in that territory. I'm giving this a two.
The real place where I see this is Najeela, because that's where you're going to be able to attack with a ton of creatures all the time. And Najeela decks are the ad nauseum fast decks now too. So that being said, I also will give this actually probably less than a two. I think I'm just going to give it a one because I don't think that there's space in a five color all good cards deck for that.
It's so interesting. If this was three mana, I would truly give this like probably a high four. If it was just one mana less, I think this is like much closer to playable. But at four mana, you can only play so many four drops in your deck. And is this better than the One Ring? Probably not. Is it better than Talion?
Definitely not.
I don't think so. The draw on Talion is so much better. Like there's just, I think it competes with too many other things that are already really not allowed.
Your deck has to be built a very specific way so that you can get in every single turn to draw a singular extra card.
The thing that I like about this is that it doesn't really care about ETB triggers. So if you're in a local meta that has a lot of hate for something like that, maybe this is something you consider if you want to specifically target against certain people. I could be very wrong, but I think it's bad. I think the card will be bad. I'm prepared to be wrong about this one because blue cards that say draw a card and win the game on them, like that's a recipe for a lot of good stuff, but I just think the four mana is too much. I'm giving it a two.
That sounds great. Then we're going to move on to Valley Floodcaller. This is two and a blue for a creature otter wizard. It's a 2/2 with flash. You may cast non-creature spells as though they had flash. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, birds, frogs, otters, and rats you control get +1/+1 until end of turn and untap them.
What was that?
Otters.
Otters.
Why are you from Boston?
I
for just
to,
that
yeah,
word?
Yeah, just for otters.
Just when I was in the zoo exhibit learning about the sea creatures.
Yeah.
Sea creatures? Well, there are sea otters.
Creatures, right? Yeah.
No, otters from the sea. There's freshwater otters too.
The freshwater's not the sea? Is the sea only ocean? I thought the sea was bodies of water.
Pond.
Like a lake. That's the sea.
There's a puddle over there. It's the fucking sea.
It's a little sea. It's a little sea. Sea is specifically oceans, though. Is that confirmed? The sea means the ocean?
No, a
now
sea
that
is
I say
a,
it out loud,
a sea is
it makes
a smaller ocean.
It's a small ocean.
I
so
think
yeah.
There's some distinction about a sea having like land borders on more sides, but I'm not sure exactly
but
what
not
it
all
is.
Sides. Like a lake can't be the sea, right?
No. No, a lake cannot be a sea.
There's so many different bodies of water. You can't expect me to know all of them.
Does its makeup have anything to do with if it's a sea or an ocean?
Like if it wears like eyeliner?
Yeah, or like blush, how much it puts blush. On. Well, I mean like salt. Like does the amount of salt in the
have
water
have to do with the sea? Yeah. I think the salt makes it an ocean. Once you put salt in the water, it's the ocean.
So all seas are freshwater.
That's a great question. Are
yep,
all seas
are freshwater? There's no such thing as an ocean. They've been misnamed this entire time.
This card is like Born Upon a Wind. It doesn't draw a card, and it's 3 mana instead of 2, but it's harder to counter, and it untaps your Birds of Paradise.
Which is awesome. A little bit more restrictive than Born, because it's only non-creatures that you can play, but
that's most of the stuff.
Combo is non-creature, yeah.
This is potentially pretty exciting, I think.
Yeah. Do you want Kinnan? Do you want to flip into this?
I'm considering it, and the reason is that Kinnan already worked hard to have an instant speed win line available. This actually makes it like a lot easier in some ways because you don't have to jump through the hoops to get emergent zone out and cracked.
Weird endurance loops either. You don't do that. You just play your regular combo, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's already a way to do it without endurance loops. If you use Colossal Sky Turtle and Invasion of Ikoria to get Sky Turtle back, and then you return Mirage Mirror from your graveyard, play Mirage Mirror, have it become a copy of Cephalid Coliseum and do the Cephalid Coliseum loop that way.
Okay. So you can do that with this. Why only casting non-creature spells with this thing, right?
Yes.
Well, Endurance exactly. Also has Flash. Endurance so you could also has,
you could,
do
yeah,
that,
Yeah, that's
too.
True. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't do for Endurance. Endurance has Flash, right?
Yeah, but you still need the Emergent Zone for, like, the Infinite Mana generation most of the time because you're using, like, the whole Baker Tide Spout line in general.
But you think this card is potentially good enough? It's close in Kinnan?
My only big hang-up is that it doesn't do anything else, really.
The untapping the Birds of Paradise, that's
which is
not
also
enough.
Why I don't run Born Upon a Wind.
Yeah, what made Jeskai Ascendancy good in Standard? Like, why did that work with Birds of Paradise?
Because Jeskai Ascendancy is really good and it loots while you do it.
And it loots, that's why. It loots while you do it, and you only had one opponent, so the massively large Birds of Paradise only had to take out one player.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And also, you could play 4 Birds of Paradise. If you could play several Birds of Paradises in your deck and have
also
a bunch
true.
Of, and then you could have a few like birds that are untapping and making mana, that would be obviously much more incentive.
And unless your commander is a bird, frog, otter, or rat
with a tap ability,
with
it
a tap
has to
ability
also benefit
too, yeah.
from the tapping and untapping.
Like it's still worth playing in like a Jeskai Ishai shell because your main win condition is an Underworld Breach line. So I think I kind of like it in there still.
What is its creature types again?
Bird, frog, otter.
No,
and rats.
It itself.
Oh, it's an otter wizard.
Otter wizard. Wizard is pretty good because I know Timnit Krom likes to go for instant speed wins. The attacker for Timnit is neat, and they also play Cavern of Souls sometimes. So, like, naming wizard is something that you could name on the cavern that could be relevant.
That's true.
Maybe Izumi's coming back.
Maybe Izumi's?
The something of scrolls. It's like tap 5
Izumi.
Wizards to draw cards or something.
That card would be really good if you get it to go.
Yeah,
for sure.
The wizard cycling card,
yeah,
too.
Eventually,
like,
wizards will be good enough in CDH. I feel like if we have like, so many good ones, but I think this card is really good. It's comparable to Born Upon a Wind. I think in most Born Upon a Wind decks, Born Upon a Wind is better. It's cheaper. The instant, it doesn't really matter that it's less counterable, I don't think, because by the time you're doing it, you've just necroed, so you can kind of protect it a little bit.
And it draws a card.
And it draws a card, which is huge.
I don't think this gets played over Born. I think Kinnan is kind of the only like strong case I can see, and I don't think I'm going to be trying it, at least not right away. So
the thing I also like about it is if you're not a deck that draws a whole bunch of cards at once, this is better than Born, because really Born is only good if you have a lot of shit to do right then, whereas this card you can just like flash it in on somebody else's end step and then just keep it around and you have that effect throughout turns of the game. You know what I mean? If you're trying to do mid-range stuff, it's not just right now to win the game, it's also to like have really good value.
The
so
Jeskai
I think that's good.
Decks that are playing Born Upon the Wind, I think are also going to want to include the Flood Caller too.
Yeah.
I think just having like an extra one of those, if you really are trying to maximize the amount that you can win on instant speed.
No, you've been saying Jeskai decks in particular. Do you think that if you have black, this is not good enough?
Well, I'm just saying that because those are the decks that have primary win cons that are Underworld Breach, whereas like
that you can win with non-creature spells.
Yeah, whereas like if I'm playing black, sometimes I'm stumbling into Thassa's Oracle combos that I want to do, and this doesn't let me Thassa's Oracle at instant speed. So
that's true. I will say the Grixis decks normally they still have the option to win
do.
With
so
Breach,
I guess
so they can still
I'm
use
not
this
saying
too.
That it's bad there. I just think it's better in Jeskai because there's also worse cards that you're playing in Jeskai too. So
Grixis has more competition.
There's going to be a lot more space for this in the Jeskai decks, which is well. I guess just why I'm putting emphasis there. But Rock'Sai might really want this too.
I think so. Rock'Sai is kind of really like leaning into like the Necro thing of things. So I think this is another good card there.
Oh my God. It's really good with like Necro Dominance, Necro Potence then too, right?
This costs too much for Rock'Sai. I don't think this is going in Rock'Sai at
Three mana is too much. Crazy. Okay. Yeah. Born Upon a Wind, that gets like a big strategy of it right now. Just
Born Upon a Wind is
two mana is much different.
It's very different.
Okay. That's fair. I think it could see play in Rock'Sai. I think three mana is like, okay.
I wouldn't be surprised to see it in Rock'Sai. They make so much mana. I'm always surprised at how much mana Rock'Sai has. So I feel like they can still do it.
But I do see what you mean. Three mana is much different than two. I'm giving this card like a 3.9. I think it's a good card. I think it's going to see play in a lot of decks.
Solid four for me.
I'm giving this a 2.5.
2.5, not too high. Too much mana.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, well, Dark Confidant is officially pushed out of the format, potentially, because Darkstar Augur is next here. This is two and a black for a 2/3. Yep, has nothing to do with Bowmaster or its bad rate. This is a Bat Warlock with Offspring for a black, which is that you can pay an additional black, and as you cast the spell, if you do, when this creature enters, you create a 1/1 token copy of it. The best new version of Kicker we've had in a while. It has flying, and at the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library and put that card in your hand. Then you lose life equal to its mana value.
Can we actually talk about Offspring just a tiny bit first?
Yes,
I
please.
I need you to know what happens in my head every time. It's Kangaskhan. Like, I'm so excited because it's just like there's a fucking little like baby one inside it with the same face.
That's kind true. I'm going to think about that every time.
Every time now. I can't ever unsee it.
Well, you could probably get like altars made that like are a Kangaskhan version of whatever card you're making with the Offspring.
Whoa.
And then get it made. That'd be, if you're an altruist out there, that's a smart idea. Do that.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Talking to you, Tim.
But this is potentially one or two Dark Confidants, and two Dark Confidants for four mana on one card seems not bad. I mean, that's two cards per turn as opposed to Dark Confidants' pretty poor rate of only giving you one card the turn after you've resolved it.
This is, in all reality, probably not seeing play. Dark Confidant is one of my favorite cards of all time, and when we started playing CDH, it was a great card. It's been pushed up by Orcish Bowmaster, like you said. This one is less painful to Orcish Bowmaster. The Offspring can still be shot by it, but the flying is pretty helpful. Three mana is a lot. I think it's close. I don't know. The right two-color black-based deck, I think, is really going to like this card.
It attacks your life a lot faster to have two. You know, we said having two Dark Confidants on the same card for four is pretty good. But it's also worth noting that having one Dark Confidant for three is not good.
Yeah.
So you never want to play it for three, basically. Like, I'm sure there's situations that will come up, but basically you need to evaluate this card as costing four, not three.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
I also think this card kind of has to be, like, at the top end of your curve at that point, because you're doing double the amount of triggers that Dark Confidant would get you, and if you're flipping into too many things that are losing you too much life, like, you're not really going to be able to use your life as a resource in any other way with two of these things.
Yeah, life totals matter. I mean, with Talion, with the Ascendancy, Bloodchief Ascension.
Yeah,
I thought we were still on Jeskai Ascendancy.
I just feel like
Damn.
There's a lot more stuff that loses you life, and so while this is appealing because it's kind of better, Bob, in some ways, it's just, I don't think it's going to cut
it. Yeah, and if we're trying to push towards creatures in mid-range hell, like, this doesn't seem like a good way to stay alive in that meta then.
It also just, it competes with a lot of other draw engines, and if you're in blue or white, you probably don't want to reach this far down for a draw engine. There's just better ones in those color combinations, so you kind of have to be in like black green, black red, or Jundish, I think. And I don't know that there's like a ton of those decks that want more
it
of
feels
this.
Feels really slow in though, and like, and Jund in particular,
right,
Jund
like
wants
you,
to go really fast.
You kind of want to be doing like very slow mid rangey Jundish stuff. I don't know, it feels close to a card that I really like, so I'm gonna keep my eyes on it, but I think it's probably like a 2, maybe 1.9.
Let's go with a 2. That sounds good. Iridescent Vine Lasher is a black mana for a creature lizard assassin that's a 1/2 with Offspring for 2, and it says landfall. Whenever a land enters, this creature deals 1 damage to target opponent.
Obnixilis. This is a great Obnixilis card, one of a few that we'll talk about. I think the one damage to help Ob draw is really nice. At one mana, that effect is great. Landfalls are hard to stop, so you just get a bunch of extra triggers, especially with fetch lands. The Offspring is awesome because it's extra instances of one damage for Obnixilis. I think it's a great card in that deck specifically.
Not only that, but it itself is a 1-2 that can make another 1-1, so on attack, it's also triggering Ob if you don't have a land drop.
Yeah, this card's great. And Obnixilis specifically.
And exactly, and only Obnixilis.
Sounds like it's a 3.
Every other deck unplayable. That sounds like a 3 to me.
Yeah, it's a 3. This is a perfect example of a 3. It is an all-star, I believe, in that one particular deck and nowhere else.
Great. Let's talk about Maha. It's Feather's Knight. This is 3-2 black for a 6/5. I can only think about that Amanda Show character every time I read this.
I didn't realize I remembered that, but as soon as you did that, I was like, oh my God. You just fucking teleported me back to like my 9-year-old couch. Right.
So this is a legendary creature, elemental bird, that's a 6/5 with flying and trample and ward for discard a card. And it says, creatures your opponents control have base toughness 1. Let's talk about cards that fuck up creatures with base toughness 1.
Okay, let's do it. Orcish Bowmaster.
Knight of Souls Betrayal.
Vilis, Broker of Blood.
Karavek the Merciless.
Contagion.
Sure.
What's the free black spell that's -2/-2 everything?
The Contagion is -2/-1 to 2 things. If you exile a black card, you can cast it for
maybe
free,
that's what I'm thinking,
I think.
Of.
Which
I
is
think.
So good.
Contagion Engine gives a -1/-1 counter to all creatures your opponents control for 6 mana.
Toxrill is also another card that would probably like something like this.
Oh, yeah, that's also very true.
In those very specific situations, I think this probably sees play in Toxrill, and then maybe as a commander that's not very good, this will also see play.
Yes, as a commander that's not very good, this will be great.
Yeah.
This will be great at shutting off all of your opponent's creatures a la, like, Elesh Norn living playing kind of style, but there's...
Works well with Elesh Norn, too, if you're
right?
Black-white.
But the Valley Floodcaller decks will still be able to win at sorcery speed with their Underworld Breach combos, and you won't be able to do anything about it.
Cool, so this is a 1.5, right?
This is a 1.5. I want to say, like... It I think sees play in Toxrill, but I don't think that 5 mana means it's as much of a slam dunk, and Toxrill is not that great. So I
Toxrill doesn't see play.
Yeah.
Toxrill also has to be out for this to be good, so that's a 12 mana combo that you've set up.
Just to kill your opponent's creatures, which like you
doesn't
can do
win you the game.
Play Damnation.
Right, yeah. So yeah, I think 1.5 is fair. There will be situations where this card slaps for sure. Overall, I think it's too expensive for CDH, but very fun design.
Alrighty then, let's talk about Osteomancer Adept. This is 1 and a black for a creature, Squirrel, a Warlock. It's a 2/2 with Death Touch, and you can tap it so that until the end of turn, you may cast creature spells from your graveyard by foraging in addition to paying their other cost. If you cast a spell this way, that creature enters with a finality counter on it. And to forage, you can either exile 3 cards from your graveyard or sacrifice a food.
As a reminder, a finale counter means if it dies, it gets exiled instead.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's not just dies. I think if it's would leave the battlefield.
No, it says would die.
If it would die.
Oh, really?
It specifically says would die, yeah. Huh.
Okay.
Which is cool. That's actually pretty cool. This is a slow Underworld Breach for creatures in your graveyard.
Yes.
So yeah. There's very few scenarios where I see this, but I feel like maybe a deck like Tyum might want it, although you are already really good at getting things out of your graveyard in Tyum.
Is it worded so that it's like all creatures throughout the turn or all creatures that are currently there?
You may cast creature spells. It's not the creature spells get.
Okay.
This.
So yeah. Any new creatures that go into your graveyard, you can still forage.
Because
yeah.
I'm thinking about like some of the Grenzo creatures, like Grenzo, no, but the creatures that when they enter, they make an amount of mana that can pay for themselves. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like Priest of Urbrask or Priest of Gix.
I feel like there's something there that you can do with a Sack Owlet and Phyrexian Altar.
Maybe if there's a way that you can also like make your creatures cost less too.
Don't you have to be able to mill a ton of cards to make that happen?
Maybe. So like if you have that card in play, this new one, and then you untap, and then you have Phyrexian Altar, which can sacrifice a creature to make 1 mana, and one of these, I can't think of the name right now, which makes this difficult, but it's a 3 mana creature that when it enters...
You mean
it
like
makes
Custodian, right?
Maybe.
Priest of Urbrask.
Priest of Urbrask is a good example. It's a 3 mana creature when it enters, you make 3 mana.
There's a black
mana.
One as well, which I think is called Priest of Gix.
Yeah, so you cast it for 3 mana, it makes 3 mana, you use the Phyrexian thing to sacrifice it to make an additional mana, you have now 4 mana, you use 3 of it to recast the thing, and then you make infinite mana.
Well,
right?
When the thing dies, it gets
the
exiled,
counter.
Is
that's
the problem. Yeah.
We just talked about this.
So,
yeah,
like,
that's not good either.
I don't see it as like a combo card. It's more like the value Underworld Breaches that like some like more green red decks will go for, right? So if you are in a slower black deck that is playing a lot of creatures, maybe you're in like some kind of a Timna stacks build, maybe this is what you'd want, because it doesn't go away. It's not like after one turn you have to sacrifice this the way Underworld Breach does. On your following turn, you just have the ability to do this again. If you're in a Seedborn Muse deck and you have creatures with flash in your graveyard, maybe you can get some extra value. I'm really reaching, but it seems like there's a lot of strong words that are very similar to Underworld Breach on this card that make me think it could be okay.
The Forge and the Finality are just make this not good enough.
Yeah.
Just
yeah, run they reanimate. Knew what they were doing.
Just run
yeah.
animate dead.
Yeah, I think I also want to mention something like Tevishtot overall is that can sacrifice a creature so you can play the creature, get the effect, sacrifice it, and then use this to play the creature one more time. That's something, but I think I agree. Overall, it's got too many stops. They took the opposite effect that they did with Nadu with this one. Nadu, they released all the valves. This one, they're like, we did Underworld Breach. We already know that card. Let's tighten up all these valves. So I think this is like a great casual Underworld Breach, if that makes sense. If you want to do Underworld Breachy graveyard stuff in your casual deck, this is great. But for regular CDH, I think this is like a 1.5, maybe a 1.
I'm going to give it a 2, and that's the highest it will ever be.
I cannot wait to play this in casual Henzi.
Oh, yes. This is fantastic in casual Henzi.
Oh, God, yeah.
Big time.
Can
big
blitz
time.
Them from the graveyard.
That's really yes, cool. That's great. Wait, how does that... So when they die with the blitz, they'll still get exiled.
They'll still get exiled,
but
yeah.
You still get the blitz, though, which is nice.
Shit.
Is it a replacement? Does the blitz say just like... If it dies, draw the card. When it dies, or
I think
when it
Blitz dies. When it adds dies. That text of when it dies, draw a card to the creature.
So the and the finality counter will remove. It won't die,
is
or
it,
is
if it,
it
would die?
If it would die, exile it instead.
Instead, so maybe you don't get the extra draw there.
I think just being able to get creatures out of my graveyard is fine.
You're still fine. That one draw is not that big a deal. I think you're right.
All right, we're going to break rules for a little bit, and we're going to actually talk about a multicolor card in the middle of the this section here.
What the fuck is happening?
This is Wick the World Mind. That's not what that is.
Yes, it is. World.
No, it's not. Is that really what it is? World?
Yeah.
W-H-O-R-L-E-D.
Yes, world.
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 The World Mind is 3 and a black for a 2/4 legendary rat warlock. When it or another rat you control enters, create a 1/1 black snail token if you don't control a snail. Otherwise, put a +1/+1 counter target on a snail you control. And then for a blue, a black, and a red, giving this card a Grixis color combination, you can sacrifice the snail to have Wick deal damage equal to the sacrifice creature's power to each opponent, then draw cards equal to the sacrifice creature's power.
This is a Grixis commander that can make use of a Dockside Loop. You can make a bunch of treasures, sacrifice some, draw your whole deck.
That's pretty much it. So if you want a Dockside Loop in
well,
your...
Well, but you need to... You need the snail, and to get the snails, you have to play rats.
So it itself is a rat, so when it enters, it will create the snail.
It or another rat. Yeah, but then you sacrifice the snail to draw the cards.
Right, yeah.
And what am I missing?
And then you recast your commander because you have infinite treasures.
Our Dockside Loop is being used with like Baron Master Wizard.
It's an outlet for Dockside.
I'm sorry, you didn't say the word outlet.
What did
I
say?
I don't know.
Oh, I meant outlet. I meant like...
Sorry.
No, you're good. I skipped over that word. I do that from time to time. But yeah, this is a Dockside Loop outlet enabler.
Yeah, draw your whole deck before you deal damage to each player, but you're essentially using it to draw your deck so that way you can find like your Thassa's Oracle or Breach one when.
I think it's kind of funny that it's also just like color shifted Minskinboo in a weird way.
It is kind of, yeah, Minskinboo.
Instead of making a huge answer, just makes a giant snail.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Wow. That is,
and it's like almost opposite colors. And this card is overall, I think, not good. It's very close to like a Tevish Krom list, which is a pretty good, very popular CDH list that makes use of like a Baron infinite mana with Dockside combo. I'm not even sure if that list really plays that anymore. They probably are just on Displacer Kitten, which is most likely better. I think this is like going to be a worse version of that type of deck. So overall, I don't think it'll see play, but it very well could. It's Grixis and it's an outlet.
The best part about this card is the novelty of snails.
Yeah.
So if you're really trying to do that, then you can play this. But otherwise, I think every other Grixis commander that's currently seen play is going to be better than Wick.
Yep. We agree?
Yeah.
What do we give this a 2, maybe?
I'm going to give it a 1. Because I don't think it's going to... I don't know.
I'll give this like a 1.9.
1.9, yeah. I think it's a 2. I think this, if you played this Grixis deck at a table, you could win probably 25% of your games. There's just better options, and so that's CDH.
25% is a huge win rate.
I guess,
well, that's just because you're in Grixis,
I feel like
Grixis,
commanders could win 25% of its game with the
Grixis
right pilot.
With a commander that's an outlet in your command zone. Like, you could have almost anything at the helm of a Grixis deck, and I would say you could have a 25% win rate if you know what you're doing. Here is where we get back on track and talk about red cards now. So the first one is going to be Agate Instigator.
Agate.
No, it is Agate. It's a creature gate. It's a 1 and a red for a 1/3 with offspring for 1 and a red. And whenever another creature you control enters, this creature deals 1 damage to each opponent.
Another Obnixilus card. Maybe this is another Obnixilus card. All the things we said about the last one, this one's a little bit worse, but Obnixilus card.
Yeah, still giving you 2 triggers every time that it triggers if you have the offspring, but it's still 4 mana for all of that.
I think this one might not quite make it into Ob, but it has some of the right words. It's just a worse rate than the other one we talked about for sure.
You can only fit so many of these effects in. Is this the one that is non-creatures or creatures?
This is the one that's whenever a creature you control enters.
I think the non-creature one we'll talk about is a little better. I'm going to give this one like a 2. It does see play in that one deck, but maybe not.
I'll give it a 1.5 because it could see play in that one deck, but I think there's an overabundance of this kind of effect at 2 mana in these decks already. And I think that the next card is going to see play more.
Sure, I'll say 1.5 as well.
Cool. Korra Station Mage is 1 in a red for an Otter Wizard that's a 2/2 with offspring for just 2.
What is it called, actually?
Korra Station Mage.
What did Korra I Station. Say?
Korra Station.
You said Korra Station. That made me think it's like a selfish, like a shellfish.
I put in Korra a Station. Crustacean
like a
Mage.
Crustacean?
Yeah. Oh, that's its new name. The Crustacean Mage says that whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this creature deals 1 damage to each opponent.
This is better.
This is a little bit better, yeah.
Each opponent.
Although, Obnixilus doesn't care about each, it just... It's as long as they've been dealt him with 1 damage. It's 1 time.
Oh, is it just every
it's
instance?
Worded, yes, okay. Every instance, I think.
But if you have 2 of them, again, you get 2 separate triggers, so you get 2 Obnixilus triggers off of 1 non-creature spell.
Non-creatures are cheaper. Mox Diamond, Chromox, you can get a couple of them on the turn that you cast. It's a little bit easier than with the creature one, so I think this one has a more likelihood of being played. I don't know that Obnixilus has this effect at 2 mana yet. I think this effect has been on 3 mana stuff.
No, Obnixilus has had this effect at 2 mana it on does. A couple things for a while.
Oh,
there's
okay.
like a 1/3 Kessig thing from Shadows over Innistrad or something that does this.
So this is already competing with other stuff at a similar level.
Yeah, I think it's really going to depend on your build. Some builds really like the Reckless Fireweaver that deals the damage when an artifact enters. I think it's really going to depend on, like, am I very artifact heavy? Do I want to be, like, looping Dockside and do that? Or instead, am I casting more, like, mana artifacts or something else? That's a bad example. But
I understand what you're saying, though, because the artifact one will trigger off of treasures, whereas this one won't trigger off of treasures, but it will still trigger off of most of your Soul Ring-type artifacts.
Correct. Whereas, I can go through different kinds of loops with this that Reckless Fireweaver won't let me go through, but Reckless Fireweaver lets me go through Dockside loops that this doesn't. So it's really going to be dependent on your build.
And I think the offspring is also just huge on a card like this.
Honestly, I think this makes it more playable than the 1/3 Kessig Cagebreaker or whatever the name of that
card
is.
The option, I think might edge that other one out. So I'm going to say like a 2.5 for this probably.
Yeah, I think it's a 2 point, somewhere on there. I'll say 2.5, sure. 2.7, something. 2.75 is what I'll say, actually, because I do think this will see play on Obnixilus, but it's not as slam dunk as the 1 mana one was, because 1
exactly.
mana is just so much better.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I need to pull up another website real quick for this next card, because Moxfield exclusively has it in a different language.
I think I know what it does. Let me know how close I am. It is a 3-mana red creature that's a 2/2 that says whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you make 2 treasures, and then it also does something else that I can't remember.
You have the gist, but let's just get it specifically correct. So it is 2 in a red for a 2/2. It's called Prosperous Bandit, and it's a raccoon rogue. It has offspring for 1.
That's the other thing.
Weird how a lot of these offspring costs are all adding up to 4 no matter how we slice it.
Yeah.
With the exception of that 1-mana creature, a lot of these are just like adding up to 4. It has First Strike, and it specifically says whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player, create that many tapped treasure tokens.
So it's not 2, it's that many. So your offspring only makes 1.
Correct, because your offspring will always make a 1/1 creature, but if you have a way to pump them, they can make even more.
This is a bad professional facebreaker, right?
Yep.
This is a bad professional facebreaker because it doesn't trigger off of other creatures, but it makes another copy of itself. So it makes another creature.
So having 2 creatures that are attacking and dealing combat damage for treasures is not bad, but they're also tapped. Like every other version of this makes them untapped.
Yeah, they're
tapped treasures.
That's kind of bad, yeah.
So like it would be a Magda card, if anything, for me, but even then, it's too slow for Magda.
Too slow for Magda. Professional Facebreaker is certainly better and sees a lot less play now than it used to.
Yeah,
I see
true.
It once in a while.
I also like the Facebreaker's keyword a little bit better. I like Menace for this kind of effect a little bit better than First Strike because the player with just Chrom in play, I can still get around.
I agree. I think this is probably a 1.5. I think it looks like a CDH card, but overall is probably not. But in a very low color red deck, maybe Magda wants it. I don't know. Probably
yeah, 1.5, I would say.
Like 1.7, I don't know.
Now you made me have to do math. You couldn't have just said 1.5?
No.
God damn. All right, let's talk about Season of the Bold, which is apparently what Tyler's feeling over here.
What?
3 and 2 red for a sorcery that says you can choose up to 5 paws worth of modes, and you can choose the same mode more than once.
What? Is that how you say that? I'll choose this mode for 2 paws and that mode for 2 paws?
What else would it be? They're paws.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm just asking, like, how do you say this card when you're trying to resolve it?
Critter footprints? Like, what are they?
I think you probably just say this mode twice and that mode once. You don't have to actually mention it.
Well, for 1 paw, you can create a tap treasure token. For 2 paws, you can exile the top 2 cards of your library until the end of turn, and then you can play them. And for 3 paws, you can, until the end of turn, or I'm sorry, until the end of your next turn, whenever you cast a spell, Season of the Bold deals 2 damage to up to 1 target creature.
Is that how the second mode is worded too?
They're both until the end of your next turn.
Which
yeah,
is a
I
huge
go
difference
that yeah.
they're open. They're until your next turn. So on your opponent's turn, you can cast them, and then after you untap, you can play them then too.
Yeah. So this does a lot. This is a 5 mana free Magda activation to search your library for anything.
You can just make 5 tap treasures, sack them with Magda, go.
It also lets you essentially draw 2 cards so that when you untap on your next turn, you can wipe the board by casting a bunch of spells. You want to.
It's 2 treasures for, it's 2 paws for 2 cards.
2 paws for 2 cards.
And you can choose up to 5 paws. So you can choose 4 cards and 1 tap treasure.
That also true.
You can
yeah.
mix them up, right?
There's so much that you can do.
Reminds me a little bit of like Galvantic Blast, which is a card that he's playing Legacy that you can exile the cards and you can only cast them on your next turn. But if you're getting a whole big chunk of them, maybe that's good enough.
Here's how I'm evaluating this, right? I think the three paw mode is basically never getting picked.
I don't even remember what it was. I blanked that one out.
Whenever you cast
a
non-creature, it deals 2 damage to up to 1 target creature.
That is kind of interesting that it deals the damage. It is a spell that goes to the graveyard, and the card in the graveyard deals the damage.
That's funny, yeah.
That's funny, right? I feel like I don't see many cards that do that. Sorry, continue.
No, all good. So I'm just going to ignore that mode.
Yeah.
The combination of the other two modes is basically like, this can be great for Magda because it doesn't care that the treasures are tapped, but for any other deck, this is way too slow. You're not spending 5 mana on something that's making 5 tapped treasures. So if you're doing some combination of the two, then it is like shitty Jeskha's Will that costs more than Jeskha's Will. So I really think this is just not viable in anything other than Magda. And even then, the fact that it costs 5 is pretty iffy.
If it was an instant, now we're talking.
If it was an instant, it's a big deal. Is it worth anything that it's like, it's almost like a Storm Enabler in that last mode, right? Whenever you cast a non-creature, it deals 2 damage. Is that what it is?
Yeah, but it's not a Storm Enabler. It's a Storm Payoff.
A Storm Payoff, sorry. Whenever you cast a spell, it's a payoff, not an enabler. You're right. It is kind of like a weird pre-Tendrils of Agony in Red Storm if you're going to like do Infinite Storm, but
it can only target creatures.
It can only target creatures.
It can only
sucks.
Target creatures.
Sorry,
it
sucks.
It's
sucks.
A 1. Move
it's
past
a 1.
It.
Maybe yep. Magda.
Let's talk about our only green card, which is Bloodroot Apothecary. For 2 and a green, this is a 3/3 Squirrel Druid that has Toxic 2, which is if it deals combat damage to a what does it say? Players dealt combat damage by this creature also get 2 poison counters.
So it's kind of like better infect sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. Whenever it enters, you and target opponent each create a treasure token. And whenever an opponent sacrifices a non-creature token, treasures for the most part, that player gets 2 poison counters.
Yeah, this is also clues. So this is a Tivit Hoser.
Ooh, it's a Lannis Hoser.
Okay, less relevant, but sure. This hoses any infinite loops with treasures, any of the Dockside loops. It stops that. Players are going to be able to just sacrifice 4 treasures and then like get rid of this most of the time. So it's not actually going to, it's not going to kill anyone with poison counters. It's just not going to do that probably.
But it's going to be an obstacle.
It's going to give them up to 8 poison counters and then you can maybe attack them later and then finish them off or something like that because they're just going to stop. But it's a deterrent. It's kind of like a stacks piece. I don't like that it gives an opponent a treasure even if they get poison counters for it. That still feels bad. I don't care that I'm getting the treasure. I still don't want to do that. But it does feel like it's close to a card.
So I'll say 2 things. 1, with respect to giving your opponent a treasure, Kinnan actually does benefit from that because it's not parody on the treasure.
Big yes.
However, for 3 mana, you can just play a fucking Manglehorn, which also shuts down the Dockside Loop, kills an artifact, and fucks all your other opponents on artifacts. Like, there's no way that this is good enough. It is just much too narrow for 3 mana to be worth an include in basically any deck.
I do agree.
Maybe mono green.
I agree. Manglehorn's probably better 9 times out of 10. Manglehorn, they can wait. They can still go through the Dockside Loop, but they still can wait and then have full access to their shit next turn. But I think that will come up much less often. I think stopping the looping capabilities, which Manglehorn does in fact still do, is the main issue. This is better against like Magda, where the tapped treasures aren't as big of a deal.
It does stop Magda pretty well.
So there's that. But overall, I agree. You're not going to want like a third of this artifact hate effect, maybe, and Manglehorn, and then even like Collector Roof is still probably better.
Null Rod is also better,
right?
Yeah.
So I think what we're getting at here is if you exclusively lose to Magda players and are looking for a silver bullet,
yeah,
this is it.
And if you're in like green-based creature stacks, which is a strategy that we have talked about being not so great right now, I think it's also fine in some of those, but like I don't even think I'm playing in Timnatana. I'm not taking Manglehorn or the white one. What's the white one?
Dauntless Dismantler.
Dauntless Dismantler is also a card that I like much more than this.
I'd rather make them wait a full turn and give me time to figure it out, as
make
opposed
my
to
good because they play all their tap
as opposed to them still having the resources that they need to like remove your thing at the same turn.
They can still sack 4 treasures, which will still be fine sometimes. So
I'm gonna give it a 1.5.
I'll agree with 1.5. I wanted to go lower, but the problem is I said 1.5 for that stupid 5-mana owl, and that thing sucks. I should have given that a 1.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I think this is a little bit better than that. I think this one will see more play than some of the other cards, even if it's not worthy of the play, because I think people like the effect. I'm going to go 2.3. But I think in a year, I think we're going to rate this as like a 1. But I do think it's going to see a lot of play, and it will do things. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
2.3.
I think I agree with that. It will see a lot of play, but I don't want that to reflect in my rating.
How true you think it
is. I know the answer already.
It's bad.
We don't need to waste our time.
Yeah, because we're always right.
Can I say something here while we're still theoretically in the green section?
Nope, moving on.
I was so excited for this set because I thought to myself, if we're going to get like a big green idiot that's fantastic in Kinnan, like this is the set. It's like the animal set. Like surely this is where we get like some wild creature that like finally there's a new like good Kinnan flip. Like
Nezahal,
one of the big ones.
Yeah,
exactly. There's one fucking mono green card on this list and it sucks ass. Wizards, stop fucking green.
Yeah, the bear was like the big hit from this one, and it's like not a Kinnan card at all. Like mills 4, you get all your lands back. It's gonna go great in my casual AC deck, but it's not a CDH card.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Guys, we've been talking for almost an hour about these cards, and we still have 13 multicolor cards, colorless cards, and lands to talk about here. So
should we part two it?
I think we're going to make this a 2-part set review and talk about all of the multicolor colorless cards next time.
Multicolored, comma, colorless cards, comma, and land cards.
Which are also colorless.
That's true. You're right.
Yeah, I rate the multi-episode set reviews lower. I think they're like a 3 for me.
Don't tell them that. They're not going to tune in next week now.
Thanks so much for watching. If you like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
SC Phillip, Olden Groompy, Gecko21, Caleb Ritchie, Zach Hartley, Kajo Alec, Sean in the Ice, Mark Cirillo, SoCal Acura, Stormageddon, Luke Cook, Demon of Rosgrees, Peter Stewart, Cornell Wild, Uncle Butts, Nick Foles, Godo9, Kwaja A. Hamid, Lauren Connell, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Huge thank you to Dragon Shield for supporting the show. Use affiliate link playtowin5 for 5% off on our affiliate link down below.
Check out
our social media.
Yeah, Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram at playtowinmtg.
Thanks so much for watching.
See you next time.
Goodbye.
Orjon, Mystic Muffin Man, Nick Saxby, Jacob Bauer, Reactive, Tyler Watson, Brian Barrington, Zachary Coulson, Tyler H, X Tyler the Tree X, Mallcraft, Driving Crooner, Baja, Mace the Ace, Dalton Pote, Crap, Hobo Ghost, Justin, Man Solo, Jacob Depp, Jan Wildfang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
And we've been going for an hour. I have to piss. Are we ready?
Yeah. Do we want to begin?
What if we started the videos like that? Do we want to begin?
Nah. Let's take the day off.
We chose not to begin today, so...
And that's the end of the podcast.